This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, September 18th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. President Donald Trump promising enough coronavirus vaccine for every American by next April, again contradicting the predictions from government health experts. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reversing its controversial guidance that had said if you came in close contact with an infected person and did not have symptoms, then you did not need to get tested, returning to the old guidance saying you should get tested. Both President Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden campaigning in the battleground state of Minnesota as voters in that state start casting early ballots. Early voting also beginning in Virginia, Wyoming, and South Dakota. The Federal Emergency Management Agency announcing an additional $13 billion in assistance to help Puerto Rico rebuild infrastructure in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria from 2017. And the Commerce Department announcing a ban on Chinese mobile apps TikTok and WeChat from mobile app stores in the U.S. starting Sunday night. It's the first step to enforce President Trump's executive order cracking down on Chinese technology companies due to national security and data privacy concerns. A little more on the revised CDC guidance on testing. The new guidance, labeled a clarification by the agency, says if you have been in close contact, such as within 6 feet of a person with documented SARS-CoV-2 infection for at least 15 minutes and don't have symptoms, you need a test. CDC also recommends these people should self-quarantine at home for 14 days, even if they test negative. The old guidance had said you do not necessarily need a test unless you are a vulnerable individual or your health care provider or state or local public health officials recommend you take one. About 40% of people with COVID-19 are thought to be asymptomatic. And now to vaccine development. President Donald Trump saying today and in a White House news conference, the U.S. will manufacture enough coronavirus vaccine doses for every American by April 2021. Again, putting him at odds with the CDC director, Dr. Robert Redfield, who said this week a vaccine would not be widely available until the summer or early fall of next year. Here's a portion of the news conference.
Mr. President, I think I heard you right saying that you said that you expect to have enough vaccines for every American by April. So as we sit here in mid-September and there have been questions about the timeline, can you walk us through now and the beginning of April, sure, to which every American can have a vaccine?
Sure, and what I think we may exceed those numbers even. Scott, do you want to discuss that quickly?
Sure. As has been said many times.
From the 20th, please.
Okay. You know, we have all the people that are involved in the actual vaccine distribution here, but we were just going through this. As of the end of the year, we will have over 100 million doses manufactured. The people who are in the prioritized list of including high risk, including first responders, will have the ability to take the vaccine. No one's being mandated to be vaccinated at the latest in January. And as we said yesterday, and or I think yesterday, There will be hundreds of millions of doses delivered for people to take it during the first quarter, and so that by April, every single American who wants to be vaccinated will have the ability to be vaccinated. It's not a forced vaccination, of course.
Dr. Fauci said today, basically echoed Dr. Redfield's comments that Q2, Q3, some point the summer of next year, the entire country potentially, or at least as many Americans that need to be vaccinated, will be vaccinated. Is that the timeline?
That number. Yeah, we think we will.
Next summer?
Yeah, that's on the outer edge. We think we can beat that number very substantially.
President Trump, along with one of his advisors on the coronavirus task force, Dr. Scott Atlas, in the White House briefing room. The Food and Drug Administration has not yet given emergency authorization or approval to any of the coronavirus vaccines now in development. Vaccines from Moderna, Pfizer, and AstraZeneca are now in the final stage of clinical trials in the U.S., and the government has pre-purchased hundreds of millions of doses of at least a half dozen experimental shots. The Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden called on President Trump to resign over his handling of the pandemic. Biden made those remarks during a CNN town hall Thursday night. Today, Joe Biden was in Duluth, Minnesota.
In the midst of this unprecedented national crisis, Trump has given up on even pretending to do his job. Almost 200,000 lives lost in the last 6 months. And experts tell us now, the same studies that relied on, the administration relied on to predict what's coming next, that we're going to lose another 215,000 lives between now and January 1st. The United States has another 36,000 new COVID cases per day. Another average 1,000 deaths a day. Just across the border, figuratively speaking, a stone's throw into Canada, one day earlier this month, the United States had 1,000 deaths of COVID. Canada had zero. Just three days ago. America had 1,200 deaths. Canada had nine. So many lives lost unnecessarily because the president is only worried about the stock market and his reelection. He refused to do what you're doing right here in this program: social distance, wear a mask, sanitize. You're protecting your apprentices. He's not protecting America. It's estimated by the scientists that if we just wore masks nationally, we'd save 100,000 lives between now and January 1st.
Joe Biden at a union training center in Duluth, Minnesota. That's a state that Donald Trump lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016 by 1.5 percentage points. Last Republican presidential candidate to carry it was Richard Nixon in 1972. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi today reacting to the latest former Trump administration employee to criticize the president. Olivia Troy worked for Vice President Mike Pence on the coronavirus task force. In a minute, you're going to hear the question to Speaker Pelosi. But here is Olivia Troy in a video.
I'm Olivia Troy. I was Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to Vice President Pence and served as Vice President Pence's lead staff member on the COVID-19 response. You know, I've been on the COVID task force from day one. I mean, the virus was very unpredictable at the beginning. There were a lot of unknowns. But towards the middle of February, we knew it wasn't a matter of if COVID would become a big pandemic here in the United States. It was a matter of when. But the president didn't want to hear that because his biggest concern was that we were in election year and how is this going to affect what he considered to be his record of success. It was shocking to see the president saying that the virus was a hoax, saying that everything's okay when we know that it's not. The truth is, he doesn't actually care about anyone else but himself. He made a statement once that was very striking. I never forgot it because it pretty much defined who he was. When we were in a task force meeting, the president said, maybe this COVID thing is a good thing. I don't like shaking hands with people. I don't have to shake hands with these disgusting people.
A portion of the video with Olivia Troy. President Trump told reporters Thursday night he does not know her, but that, quote, the people get a hold of her and say, let's say some bad things about Donald Trump. saying that she was goaded into those statements when she left the administration. Vice President Mike Pence put out a statement saying that she was a disgruntled employee who left the White House and now has decided to play politics during an election year. On Capitol Hill today, a reporter asking House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this question.
Yesterday, a woman who served on the Vice President Mike Pence on the task force, Olivia Troy, came out and sharply criticized the president's conduct. And this comes after John Bolton also did the same thing to the president. The White House, in turn, has questioned their credibility. Why doesn't the House, why shouldn't the House call them and to have them testify under oath to tell their stories to the American public?
The House has been trying to do that for a while. As you know, the administration has resisted that, and we are in the courts on their very subjects. But I just want to enlarge your question for a second. The president, we all know what the president is, okay? Now, no need to go into that. The president's enablers have a responsibility to our country. For months, the president was calling early on the virus a hoax. It was going to disappear magically. It was going to be a miracle. We're all going to be to church together on Easter Sunday. By the way, the holiest day of the year, the day Christ is risen, means a lot to many of us. So him to deal frivolously with that, I found offensive, as I did his offense to science in saying what he did. But where were his people coming out and saying, that's not right, Mr. President. We're going to leave if you continue to speak that way. And that applies to so many other things. What he's saying about immigrants to our country, what he's saying about the economy. He has, he is what he is, and he's the president of the United States. But these enablers, they're going to have to tell their children and their grandchildren the responsibility they have for the fact that we are 200,000 people dead and that didn't have to happen. Would they have all been saved? No, but many would have.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi during her weekly briefing on Capitol Hill. And today, the chairs of four House committees are asking the Justice Department Inspector General to investigate the Attorney General William Barr over statements Barr has made regarding the election, saying that he unfairly is influencing it. They are Gerald Nadler from Judiciary, Adam Schiff from Intelligence, Carolyn Maloney of Oversight and Reform, and Zoe Lofgren from House Administration. Politico reporting Terry Branstad, the outgoing U.S. ambassador to China, said in a new interview that President Donald Trump mistakenly believed the Chinese in the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. The Politico article goes on, the remarks from the Trump appointee and former longtime Iowa governor represent an apparent break with the White House amid a heated general election campaign, which has seen Trump cast himself as tough on China's ruling Communist Party while describing Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden as beholden to Beijing. Branstad was interviewed in Beijing by CNN.
The Chinese system was such that they covered it up and they even penalized the doctors that were pointing it out at the very beginning. So the result was what could have been contained in Wuhan ended up becoming worldwide pandemic.
President Trump's approach has been, well, it's been a little bit all over the place, to be quite honest. I mean, earlier this year, we saw that he was saying that President Xi was a good friend, a gentleman, complimenting his leadership, even as the outbreak was starting. And now we've seen he has not criticized President Xi by name, but he's clearly slamming China and the party.
The president has called, there's been more telephone contact between President Trump and President Xi than any other American president with the Chinese leader. And initially, I think President Trump believed the Chinese when they said what they said about the virus. And then he and the rest of the world found out that what they said was not true, and misinformation and cover-ups occurred. And the result was we are faced with a worldwide pandemic. And it's really, I think, the communist system of China and their unwillingness to admit wrongdoing that caused this whole thing to happen.
Terry Branstad on CNN. He became U.S. ambassador to China in the summer of 2017 and will be stepping down from that position in a couple of weeks. On Wall Street today, the Dow was down 244, NASDAQ down 117, S&P down 37. A Congressional Budget Office analysis is finding the coronavirus economic aid bills passed this year added 4.7% to the gross domestic product of the U.S. in 2020 and will add another 3.1% to the economy next year. Report could also give a boost to Democrats' stalled negotiations over additional relief. One of their priorities, direct assistance to state and local governments, had, under this analysis, the largest effect on the economy, more than double the effect of the Paycheck Protection Program, which offers small businesses forgivable loans to keep workers on the books. Back in a minute with more Washington Today. And welcome back to Washington Today. A couple of other headlines. The U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan warning that extremist groups are planning attacks against a variety of targets, but are taking particular aim at women. This comes as the Taliban and government-appointed negotiators are sitting together for peace talks for the first time, trying to end decades of war. And Britain's Queen Elizabeth II has removed one of the United Kingdom's highest honors from former movie big shot Harvey Weinstein, who was serving a 23-year prison sentence after being convicted in New York of sexual assault and rape. Weinstein will no longer be CBE, Commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. From the Associated Press, the Commerce Department is saying today it will ban Chinese-owned TikTok and WeChat from the U.S. app stores on Sunday and will saddle the apps with technical restrictions that could seriously limit their functionality in the U.S. The Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross explained on the Fox Business Channel.
Well, there are two separate situations. Both are a problem in that both are taking data from American public and sending it to China is our fear. Where they differ is that WeChat is essentially a funds transfer and payment processing mechanism. For all practical purposes, it will be shut down in the U.S., but only in the U.S. as of midnight on Monday by the Commerce Department ruling. TikTok is more complicated because, in effect, there are two alternatives there. One is the rules that we'll be announcing right now, and the other is if there is a transaction completed by November 12th. The original orders required Commerce Department to promulgate these rules in the Federal Register by September 20th. The 20th is Sunday. Federal Register doesn't publish on Sunday, doesn't publish on Saturday. That's why we're publishing them today. So as to TikTok, the only real change as of Sunday night will be won't have access to improved apps, updated apps, upgraded apps, or maintenance. So if that were to continue over a long period of time, there might be a gradual degradation of services. But the basic TikTok will stay intact until November 12th. If there's not a deal by November 12th under the provisions of the old order, then TikTok also would be, for all practical purposes, shut down.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross on Fox Business Channel. More from the AP story. It says under today's order, President Donald Trump has pressured the app's Chinese owner to sell TikTok's U.S. operations to a domestic company. It's not clear how the latest prohibitions will affect a deal recently struck by California tech giant Oracle aimed at satisfying U.S. concerns over TikTok's data collection and related issues. President Trump was asked about the negotiations.
The Commerce Department essentially gave you a runway today to strike a deal after the election. Do you expect a TikTok deal before the election or after the election?
I think it could go quickly. We have great companies talking to us about it. You know about Oracle. You know Microsoft has been involved, and let's see whether or not they're continuing to be involved. Walmart is truly a great company. They're very much involved. They want to do something. So we have some great options, and maybe we can keep a lot of people happy, but have the security that we need. We have to have the total security from China. We're not going to do anything to jeopardize security. At the same time, it's an amazing company and very, very popular. So if we can do a combination of both, I'd be very happy doing that. Could go very quickly, though. Could go very, very fast.
President Donald Trump at the White House. The video sharing TikTok has more than 100 million U.S. users. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing today the U.S. House will take up two bills next week dealing with U.S.-China trade, restricting goods made by forced labor. Here's the speaker at her weekly news conference.
Next week, I'm so pleased that we will have two bills on the floor. One of them led by Jim McGovern, who's the chair of the China Commission, the Executive Commission, and this is a bill, bipartisan legislation by McGovern to ensure that goods made in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region are not made with forced labor, those that are imported into the United States. As you know, the Chinese government has arrested, put into camps, a minimum of 1 million, could be 2 or more million Uyghurs in so-called education camps. And we want to be sure that the goods made in those camps and imported to the United States are not made with forced labor. Actually, it doesn't even have to be in the camps. They can have forced labor outside the camps as well. And that's Jim McGovern. Representative Lizzie Wexton's bill will require U.S.-listed companies to disclose information about supply chains and the use of goods from forced labor or internment camps. We continue to wait for the Senate to take up the Tibet Policy and Support Act, which passed in January. We've had a number of successes on the floor, House and Senate, in a bipartisan way, speaking out against what's happening in China, in Hong Kong, in Tibet, in the Uyghur territories, and just across the country. I said it over and over. If we refuse to speak out about human rights in China because of commercial interest, then we lose all moral authority to speak about human rights any place in the world.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, today on Capitol Hill. China has consistently rejected any allegations of using forced labor and criticized the U.S. for meddling in its internal affairs. This is Washington Today. The Trump administration announcing $13 billion in additional aid for Puerto Rico to help with the rebuilding in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, which hit in 2017. President Trump announcing it at his briefing today, asked why now and how does it fit into what he has said before about providing aid to the U.S. territory.
Mr. President, this huge aid package to Puerto Rico, why not a year ago? Why not 2 years ago? Why not 3 years ago? Why 46 days to the election?
Because what we're doing is we've been working on it for a long time to get it passed. Very tough to get things passed. Democrats, where they don't want to see this happen, and they probably certainly didn't want to see it happen at this point. But it's a big package. It's a great package. And I think the most exciting part of the package isn't necessarily the billions of dollars. It's going to be what we do with the pharmaceutical industry. We're going to get them back into Puerto Rico. They liked being there, but they changed the tax situation. They ripped it out. So they really ripped apart the island. And we're going to bring it back, John.
It may be simply coincidental, but it does coincide with the big push for Puerto Rican voters that the Biden-Harris campaign.
Yeah, I think that that's well, they can't do anything. Look, the Biden-Harris campaign, what they did, they hurt. I've gone through it. And whether it was President Obama or Vice President Biden, they were a disaster for Puerto Rico, a disaster. And what we're doing and what we've done, but what we're doing is something that will be fantastic for many years in the future. Bringing back the pharmaceutical industry, manufacturing in Puerto Rico is what they've wanted for years, and we're doing that in addition to the $13 billion.
President Trump in the White House briefing room. The $13 billion is the largest FEMA grant since Hurricane Sandy back in 2012. A CNN story about this aid notes the move is likely an attempt to appeal to Puerto Rican voters who moved to the battleground state of Florida after the hurricane struck the U.S. territory. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announcing some changes to how the federal government will help those with chronic kidney disease pay for treatment. 38 million Americans have chronic kidney disease. Here's the secretary on a teleconference with reporters.
In the system the president envisions, government rules and incentives don't stand in the way of a treatment or choice that you and your doctor agree makes sense for you. But under the status quo in kidney care, our rules and government incentives so often do stand in the way of treatment that a patient and his or her doctor might agree makes sense. That's why we're finalizing a new mandatory model in Medicare today, which will enroll about one-third of traditional Medicare beneficiaries with ESRD, end-stage renal disease, about 120,000 patients, in a system that rewards more convenient, comfortable options like home dialysis and incentivizes rather than discourages transplants. Through the Health Resources and Services Administration, we're significantly expanding support for living organ donation to include compensation for lost wages, child care, and elder care, because no generous American who wants to save a life by becoming a kidney donor should face barriers to doing so. Just one of today's actions alone would do more to advance American kidney health than anything that's been done in decades. And these are just two of a number of actions we've taken on this scale.
Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar on a teleconference. Kidney disease also becoming a greater concern during the coronavirus pandemic. An article in the Philadelphia Inquirer in August has a headline, "The coronavirus is damaging kidneys. Doctors worry that some survivors will need dialysis forever." Find more at Inquirer.com. And the Jewish New Year holiday, Rosh Hashanah, begins this Friday night. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu posting a video while he was in Washington this week for the signing of two accords with Arab nations.
Happy Shana Tova to all the Jewish communities worldwide. This is not the normal Shana Tova that we know. Because of Corona, we can't embrace one another. We can't all crowd the synagogues and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We have to act in a careful manner. But there is also extraordinary news this year because we are starting it with two peace treaties that Israel has signed today, that I signed here in Washington with the United Arab Emirates and the Kingdom of Bahrain, with the auspices of President Trump of the United States. This is fabulous news because it's changing our world, because it took us 26 years to go from the second peace treaty that Israel had with an Arab state to the third, and it took us all of 29 days to get to the third and fourth. This gives us wonderful blessings for the new year, a blessing of hope, a blessing of friendship, a blessing of peace, and it augurs well for the people of Israel and for the state of Israel. Shana Tova to all of you.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump putting out a statement on the Rosh Hashanah holiday, also mentioning the Abraham Accords. And they write, as the High Holy Days begin, this momentous milestone in geopolitical relations is a reminder that we can create a coalition of nations that have shared goals of eliminating extremism and promoting security and prosperity while also respecting religious freedom and building a more hopeful tomorrow for future generations. Thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere and get our podcasts. Podcasts also available wherever you get your podcasts or at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good night and weekend.